Buy, scale, and selling secrets that you need to know. Hi, I'm Jared Krause. I'm the host of the Buying Online Businesses podcast. And today I'm speaking with John Cheng, who has bought two online businesses from Flipper and sold one, both being e-commerce businesses. And he knows a lot about scaling and exiting in e-commerce. In this pod, John and I talk about the business he bought, the first business he bought for Flipper, how much he bought it for, how he scaled it and how he sold it, how much he sold it for as well, why he sold it, and everything he learned through the process of not just buying it, but growing it and then also selling it. And he shares his advice on each stage all the way through the podcast. Specifically, we talked about how he grew the business, his mindset around growth, his mindset about e-com, having product market fit, how to stay in the business, keep motivated to stay in the business, and then also the things he'd learned when it came time to sell the business, get the business ready for sale, and how to make an exit very profitably. Now, there's so much value in this podcast episode. I know you're absolutely going to love it. But before we dive in, we do talk about buying businesses. If you have not yet already got my due diligence framework, don't risk buying a business without it. It's free. You can get it at buyingonlinebusinesses.com/free resources. It takes the guesswork out of buying businesses, and thousands and thousands and thousands of people have got this framework. So use it. All right, let's dive in. Do you have a website you might want to sell either now or in the future? We have a hungry list of cashed up and trained up buyers that want to buy your content website. If you have a site making over $300 per month and want to sell it, head to buyingonlinebusinesses.co/sell-your-business or email us at info@buyingonlinebusinesses.com because we will likely have a buyer. Details are in the description.
John, thanks for your patience and welcome to the pod.
Yeah, my pleasure. Happy to be here.
Yeah, looking forward to having a chat about what you've been up to. So you bought a couple of businesses off Flipper. Congrats. And there's one particular one that you bought and scaled it and made an exit, which I really want to dig into. Why? So tell me about that business. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, sure. This was probably 2017. So it was my first business I've ever bought. I got pretty famous on Flipper for, you know, buying it on Flipper, selling it on Flipper. I bought it for $7,500 and then 2 years later was able to sell it for a little over $500,000. So over a 50x return. And happy to share, you know, what I was thinking when I bought it, how I grew it, what I was thinking when I sold it, you know, and everything along the way. And happy to just share what I learned along that journey with your listeners and anything that can help them in their journey.
Yeah, man. Cool. So $7,500 and you bought an e-commerce business. What made you want to buy an e-commerce business?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I didn't know what type of business I wanted to buy. I think the reason why I picked an e-commerce business was because every other business, it didn't feel like you were getting really good value in terms of like the multiple or anything like that. I mean, even in e-commerce, you weren't really getting a great multiple, but the business was doing like $1,000 a month in revenue. And, you know, for $7,500, you couldn't get any other business that was like doing as much revenue or profit or anything like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Fair. And so I often speak to people that they're starting out, like, I want to buy a business. And sometimes if they're buying a business and they don't have experience with digital marketing and the business is heavily reliant on digital marketing, I sort of like shy away from that. But you've done the opposite. You've went and bought a business that, like, did it have digital marketing before you bought it? Like, was it running paid ads at all before you bought it or not really?
Not really, because it was doing like $1,000 a month in revenue. So that, if you really think about that, yeah, it's like doing $30 a day in sales. And, you know, sometimes it was like you did 100 and sometimes you did zero and they were selling to their friends and family and all of that. I think one of the biggest lessons I learned, and this I think will be helpful for your listeners, is that I feel like when you buy a business, even especially when you buy one that's like relatively smaller, you're not buying a passive investment. You're not buying like a bond. You shouldn't really look at it like in terms of like the financials. The way I looked at it was like, I'm going to treat this as like a real life MBA, and I'm okay with losing all of this money. I probably will lose all of this money, but I will learn a lot, you know, through this process and being incentivized and motivated to learn about digital marketing, you know, by having this kind of like, you know, burn the bridges type thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if I hear you correctly. You said, you know, it's not to look at the financials or bother with the financials. I would strongly suggest it's important to look at the financials and maybe also emphasize that if you're treating it like an education and you're wanting to scale it and grow it, that it's the financials might not absolutely be everything, but I still think the finance, like going through DD on financials, is pretty important.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And I came from a hedge fund background, so I did a lot of like due diligence in the financials, and that's all I looked at. I think it's, yeah, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying like don't treat it as a, you know, don't look at the numbers or anything like that. But yeah.
Yeah, I just the way I heard it, maybe it was only me, I just thought I better like make sure that I'm clear with DD, because as you said, you've got experience in DD and it's pretty important, right? Like, tell me, did you learn a lot through your experience doing DD? Like, and if so, what did you learn?
Yeah, I mean, when I bought the business, I found out that like most of their sales were maybe like half of their sales were like friends and family. You know, so like when you're buying a business that's small, and it wasn't like they were trying to hide it or anything like that. It was basically like, oh, we're starting this little brand, we're selling it to our friends are trying to support us. And then, you know, I bought it, it was doing $1,000 a month in revenue. A couple months later, half the revenue went away because, you know, they were selling to like a local, like Missouri, just like a rec center in Missouri or like something like that. And, you know, they just didn't want to continue that relationship, or like some of the buyers had the same last name as the owner. And it was like, okay, well, I really just got to figure out. It was basically starting from scratch, but it was just like, I paid for a brand name and, you know, a Shopify theme. Yeah.
That's a really good way to look at it, because when you're buying something for $7,500, you like, there's a big difference between buying a website that's got some functionality and a logo and a bit of a brand versus buying a business. What I classify as a business is a system that provides an income with little input. And it sounds like this was not an established business, more so something starting out, and then you built it into a proper business, which is awesome. So when you first bought it, what were your steps on and how did you build out your growth plan for this?
Yeah, I mean, when I first started out, I tried a lot of different things. I tried, you know, influencer marketing. I tried Google Ads. You know, I bought books on, you know, SEO and like all this stuff, and eventually settled on kind of focus that, you know, Facebook was going to be the platform. And I just kind of thought of it as like, oh, like other people are able to make Facebook work. Facebook is a real company. It's not like a scam, you know, like they're one of the biggest companies ever. So I was like, there's something that I don't know. And eventually, you know, through a lot of pain and wait, like spending my own money, figured out, you know, creative and Facebook ads and all of that. So, and like product market fit, merchandising, you know, finding products that actually sell to a very specific customer base and all of that, you know. Yeah.
So I got a side tangent story. Facebook is very much a real business. In fact, I saw Mark Zuckerberg just a few weeks ago. I was in Japan snowboarding with some friends. We went into just a random bar. It's wild. I got some footage of me standing in line with Zucks, like literally just behind me. And yeah, he was just sitting there eating lunch by himself. There's a bodyguard in the bar on the other side of the bar and all that sort of stuff. And pretty like, I think a lot of people in the bar were like really like blown away. and I thought it was a pretty interesting story. And I really enjoyed looking at other people's reactions when they realized it was like Mark Zuckerberg. Like there wasn't a lot of attention around him, but like there was like, you know, people were talking in the pub and stuff. And it's quite an interesting thing that happened when I was in Japan a few weeks ago. But aside from that side note tangent on Zucks and running into him, you went with Facebook, and why? And so you decided on Facebook because of that's where most of your audience was, or it was, did you decide based on figures on how much your ROI you're getting from that particular platform compared to others? Like, what made you stay with it?
Yeah, I mean, I tried every other platform, and I think I bought a book on Google Ads, and I tried reading it, and it just didn't make a lot of sense to me. Like, I tried running some of the ads, and in the back of this book, it was a guy named like Perry Marshall, who was like this big Google Ads person back in the day, and then he had a like, it was some like referral thing where he referred me to this like Facebook ads book, and then I joined that, and then they had some like group attached with it, and actually like a couple of people that you might know were involved there, like Molly Pittman, James Schramko was like big in there in that space, or they kind of knew each other. So I ended up joining this like group with, you know, this early agency founder, Molly Pittman, and they were just like talking about like how to run ads, and I learned that way.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, James, I was actually just talking about James Schramko the other week. One of my friends is catching up with him in a week's time. But yeah, closely connected with Ezra Firestone, was probably in that book. Molly, yeah, so some people spending some serious coin, you know, millions of dollars on ads a year, maybe even per month. But all right, cool. So then you started with your Facebook journey, and was like the main way that you scaled the business. And how did you decide like what product was like the number one to put ads into?
Yeah, it was really difficult because I couldn't, with the products that we had, none of them were able to be profitable on ads. You know, it was just a way lower average order value. It was kind of like, it wasn't dropship, but it was like very low quality stuff, low priced stuff. So we did a lot of testing, and I would say we tested like maybe hundreds of different styles, designs of jewelry, cat jewelry, dog jewelry, you know, these stones, that stones. And eventually we came across one style of jewelry that just immediately kind of like overnight was like a huge hit, and the business went from maybe like $10,000 a month in revenue at that time to like $50,000 a month overnight. Like, it was basically like a rocket ship once you had this kind of design of jewelry that really worked with, you know, some Facebook audience. And it was kind of like the early times of like the Majuri style, like fine jewelry for every day, gold plated sterling silver, minimalist jewelry style. And yeah, we like luckily like jumped onto that wave and was able to grow it through that. And, you know, 50 became 100, 100 became 200, and eventually like grew to 7 figures and got to a point where it was doing a healthy amount of revenue per month.
Cool. Yeah, congrats. It's so important to understand that the product, like having the right product in front of the right market, it sells like hotcakes if you work that out. And I guess people don't understand that, you know, when you're starting a business, what you're really doing is iterations to find product market fit until you get something that works, and then it can be scalable. Because a lot of people try to get to that level they can scale and spend a lot of money and then burn out and never get to it. But it's good that you made it. So congrats. And what were some of the key lessons that you learned, I guess, through, or how long did you have this before you sold it? And what were some of the key lessons you learned that you would love to share around like growing a business, I guess?
Yeah. So I would say that I had it for like a little over 2 years. And I would say, similar to your point, like growth is not linear. Like it would be nice to think of business as, oh, you do X and you get Y, and it's kind of like a formula, but it's not really like that. Like you said, in the beginning, it's a lot of pain, a lot of testing, a lot of losing money, and it feels like you're kind of like digging for gold. And the hardest part, I think, is believing that the next product that you test, or the next design, or the next headline, or the next marketing message is that correct one. Because imagine you do something 20 times in a row and they've all failed. Like, it takes a certain mindset to be like, all right, 21, that's, this is going to be it, and still be excited about that. Because, and especially if you've never gone through that, you know, journey before, it could be really frustrating to be like, well, I tried everything. Like, this just doesn't work. Or like, it's not my fault. Like, online business just doesn't work, or something like that. So my mindset was, you know, kind of like an Edison, just like testing things in the lab and just trying not to lose too much money while, like, you know, every day the ads were like not profitable, or this design didn't work, or this design worked a little bit, but then, oh, it didn't work. So I think when you find product market fit, you'll know it's product market fit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. You'll know it. And that's a really good example. Another one is like Walt Disney, the amount of rejections. And there's authors and, you know, movie stars that talk about this as well. Like, the amount of rejection that he went through with Mickey Mouse to get to finally produce it was a high amount. It was insane. And now it's one of the largest empires in the world, Disney. So stick with it, guys. Yeah, I like that mindset. And so what made you decide to start? What caused you to think, all right, I want to sell this now? And then how did you go about getting the business sellable?
Yeah, so I would say this. I was running it for a period of like a year and a half. And I basically, like, it was my entire life. I didn't have friends. I didn't go out. I didn't like go on dates. It was like, I woke up, I checked the sales. Like, I did stuff, and then I went to sleep, I checked the sales. And I basically like got to a point where I felt a little burnt out. And I think burnout happens usually when things are kind of like not working well. Because if it was growing super fast, as you know, like, I grew it from $1,000 a month in revenue to, like, you know, some months we were doing like $200,000 a month in revenue. So when you grow that fast, you feel like it just feels so good, right? You're like, oh, I'm like, I gotta do all these things, but it feels good because we're growing. It feels like you're getting pulled along. And, you know, the business was still relatively healthy, maybe like 100 or 120 a month in revenue. But when you're not like, when you're used to that hyper growth, then like kind of like, you know, 5%, 10% growth doesn't feel that good anymore. And then also, you know, Facebook ads is relatively like unstable, you know, it's not just that, even back then it was relatively unstable. So there are some days where like my life like flashed before my eyes. Like, I had like 90% of my net worth in this business. I was like 27 years old, you know, when I first started, like I was like trying to get food stamps because I didn't have enough cash. So it was like, yeah, it was like my life flashed before my eyes. And I was like, you know what? I'd like to take like some chips off the table. And then the selling process is pretty stressful. I would say from the moment you decide to sell to the moment you get the cash in your account, it's probably like another like 4 to 6 months. So the whole process and all that while you have to like talk to people who are interested and still run the business and, you know, almost get to the finish line, but then they're like, oh, I can't get a loan or whatever it is, or whatever, you know, issues that can come up.
Yeah. Yeah, man. Congrats on sticking with it for as long as you did, with like the amount of hours you put into it. I'm sure that you learned that that might not have been the healthiest approach, or scalability of a business and yourself. But it's a really good life lesson, right? Like, I've done that myself too, where I worked so hard, I got glandular fever, super sick. I didn't even know until I found out, and, you know, a year later, and had to go through this wild protocol to get my health back on track. And the sale, like, I'm really interested in the sale. So you decided to sell, take some chips off the table. I think that's such a wise move. Congrats on that. Like, that sets you up for the next few projects and the next part of your journey. What did you do in terms of setting the site or the business up for sale? Was there much, or was it already pretty ready to just hand over? Like, tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, I mean, there were like SOPs and everything like that, and An e-commerce business is relatively easy to understand. It's like there's customer service, there's fulfillment, there's the marketing, and like those three things are probably like the core of the business, and that makes up 90% of the business. So I try to run the business from the perspective of a long-term owner. So I would always try to do things that were, kind of like best for the customer, because I didn't really expect to sell it. And, it just got to a point where I was like, man, this is like really stressful and all of that. But it wasn't like I was planning on selling it. It wasn't like I was like pumping it and then like hoping someone would, take me out. And like happy to answer, any questions that this, like the seller might have had, or like, what did you have about the sale process?
Yeah. Well, firstly, I think that's the best mindset for somebody that is growing a business is to not have in mind that you're going to sell it because then you can cut corners, which is, yeah. Firstly, before we dig into that, is this a sell product distribution business? Like you were fulfilling the products yourself, like you were buying wholesale and then sending them out yourself, or was it partly drop shipping? Like how was the model?
Yeah, when we first started, it was drop shipping, and then we got to the point where we found a proper supplier to actually make the product. And I mean, they were still based in China, and but we had a contact with them. They would make our branded boxes and everything. But yeah, jewelry is very like high margin anyway, so it's not like we needed a lot of space and everything like that. And even back then, there was like some program called like ePacket, where it was cheaper to ship from China to the US than the US to the US. So, and customers most of the time got their order within like a week or so. So, we had an arm in China that basically they would ship from China to the US. We would hold some inventory in the US as well and ship to customers. Like shipping was relatively cheap. Like this was like under a pound, under half a pound, like just jewelry. So that was the good thing about it. So yeah, it was mostly, I'd say it's like a hybrid model, but it wasn't like drop ship in that we didn't know our suppliers or anything like that.
Cool. Yeah, my question around like getting it ready for sale was, did you have to get your like P&L and finances sorted? Like, did you have to have your SOPs all built out? Sounded like you already had all that pretty well ironed out and ready for sale. So did you, is that right?
So in terms of like the finances, yeah, like we kept basically good financials throughout the life of the business, and I mean that helped. It helped that when I sold the business, the buyer got a really good price. Like I sold it for probably less than it was worth, but for me it was the right decision because I was like, I just don't want to do this anymore at the time. So they got a really good price, so they weren't like looking at every little cranny expense or something like that.
Yeah, cool. And so you said it was like maybe a 4 month, 4 to 6 month process to sell it. So did you list it on Flippa?
Yeah, we listed on Flippa. We actually got pretty far with one buyer, and then last moment he couldn't get the loan, and then we talked to kind of like our second choice and was able to finalize a deal with him.
Cool. And was it cash or was it a little bit of an earnout?
So it was a mix of cash and a seller note. So I would say it's like 75% cash and maybe like 25%, like not earn out because it was owed no matter what, but it was a seller note.
Cool. Awesome, man. So what did you learn? Like for people that are building a business now, they've just bought one, they're building it out. What advice would you give to somebody wanting to sell their business and go through that process of an exit?
Yeah, I would say the thing that really helped me when I was selling the business is telling my, because you would get pretty far along the path with someone and then they just kind of pull out or they're not that interested. And I just kept telling myself, like, whether or not this business sells, the value is there. Like, you can't deny that this business that was doing $1,000 a month in revenue, that was now at the time doing like 120, 150 a month in revenue, was not more valuable than it was before, right? So, I would just tell myself that. I would say if you're looking to sell a business and you're currently growing a business, like people don't fall for, tricks or anything like that. There are things that make your business more valuable, and like you either kind of like, if no one is wanting to buy your business, it's probably because like there are things about that business that are not attractive. You know what I mean? Like you want something that you can transfer over. Like every business buyer wants the same thing. They want reliability of revenues. They want recurring revenues. They want growth. They want high margin. They want low, they want like something that's not attached to the owner or like not brand name, like jaredkraus.com. Like these are things that everybody you would want as a buyer, right? So just think of like how do you make it attractive to a buyer?
Yeah, I love that. And so that's what you did in your obviously your listing. And what about your workload for this? Did you how many hours a week were you working when you were selling it?
When I was selling it, I mean, I was still working like 20, 30 hours a week on it, and the sale process could take like, I don't know, 5, 10 hours a week. It depends on like how many people were interested and how many people I had to talk to.
Yeah, and what about the training period? Did you have a long training period for the seller?
No, it was probably like 3 months, and he would hit me up with, questions after, but that was fine.
Yeah, cool. And so how did you reinvest the money?
So I actually bought a couple other e-commerce businesses and have now grown them to kind of similar revenue run rates, and hopefully we'll continue to grow them. But I bought a couple apparel businesses, and I thought I was going to be done and ride off into the sunset, but I was like, this is really not enough money to ride off anywhere. So I was like, I think now that I had a little safety cushion and didn't have to operate from fear every time you had like a bad day on the ads or something like that.
Yeah. And what's your plan with these next e-commerce businesses? Are you just building to hold, building to sell, or what's the go?
Yeah. So yeah, like I said, like I feel like the mistake I made with my first business was selling when like forcing to sell because I was stressed. I think, building the value in the businesses is the most important part. Whether or not you capture it via just holding on or selling it, I think that's relatively not easy, but I would say it's like it's not a you don't have to put much effort into it. It's kind of like harvesting like the seeds that you've been kind of growing this whole time, right? So I haven't decided yet. I'm probably going to continue to grow them until it stops being fun to do business, and this time just be a little bit more experienced.
Oh man, that's really cool. And so I know that for myself, I've learned so many things through the different businesses I've had. I've had media businesses, I've bought e-commerce businesses, scaled them, sold them as well, spent a bunch of money on ads and then went different route like information and selling info product sort of thing, membership and all that sort of stuff. Now, what did you learn from the same business model from going from, buying your first e-com to buying multiple e-com businesses that allowed you to make it funner to run the business, these businesses that you have and stay in the business longer? Or even like, what did you learn that was better for growth?
Yeah, I would say that in e-commerce, like what you sell really matters. It's not really about like your charisma or your ability. It is to some extent, but certain businesses just do better than others by nature of the product. And that a lot of times it's not like skill or anything like that, that it's kind of just like the DNA of the product that you're selling. So like businesses with a subscription component generally are better. Businesses that are higher margin are usually better than, businesses with higher average order values are better, and all types of like little things like that. I would say What I learned the most about an e-commerce business is what you're really selling is not a physical product. What you're really selling is a solution to some sort of hyper-specific problem, right? Like with our jewelry business, we called our customers and we're like, hey, like what do you like about this, right? And they were like, oh, like it looks so expensive, but it's not. And we were selling this for like, we would sell like a ring for like $60. And they didn't know that we got it made for like $5. And they were like, oh, but it looks like this style that looked like $400. So like to them, they were getting a good deal. We were getting a good deal, and like everyone was happy, right? So I feel like a lot of times, especially in e-commerce, people kind of like try to think about like, how do I trick this into people, or how do I force people into this? Like, you want a business so good that your customer knows your margins and is still happy to pay it. You know, like I use this brand, Monos. So like they make like luggage, right? And you know, they probably have really good margins. It's like $200 for a suitcase, but they're so well designed. It looks really sleek. Like it's a great experience. Like I need a piece of luggage, right? And I'm like, okay, that like I'm not gonna go make luggage. Like I'm not gonna, you know, source my supplier for luggage and do it like that. Like I'll give them like an extra $100 for kind of like going through that whole process and having a brand and doing that, right? So, and I would feel like my customers are hopefully saying the same thing.
I love that. I've found that the best way to grow a business is not what we think that the customers want. It's actually just getting feedback from them and giving them more of what they want, less of what they don't want. And that's exactly what you've done, like with speaking to them on the phone, getting great customer feedback. I mean, you can go then and they say, oh, we like the pieces of jewelry that's, they look very expensive. They look like a $400 piece, but I'm getting it for $60. Then that's an idea straight away. Oh, how do I get these? Go look at all these expensive pieces and how do I recreate those, but make them a bit cheaper and make them look similar, if not better, but cheaper. And you can sell far more products like hotcakes. So it's a really good piece of advice.
Exactly. It's like that kind of like job to be done that do you know the story of the jobs to be done with the milkshakes and whatnot or no? Cool. So I mean this is my favorite story about kind of business, and it colors like how I think about, you know, like if you have a business, it's basically a job to be done. So there's this Harvard professor, he was hired by McDonald's, and McDonald's asked him, you know, like we need your help selling milkshakes, right? And you know, we tried everything. We tried saying like more milkshake, more chocolatey, like more chocolate chunks, or like stronger, or like bigger, or like more value for your dollar. And he's like, none of that worked. And what he did was he kind of like watched how people, you know, use the milkshake, or how they like why they did it. And he noticed that most of the milkshakes, or like a large amount of the milkshakes, were being sold early on in the morning and before like 9 a.m. So he goes up to these cars buying these milkshakes through the drive-through, and he asks them, hey, you know, like what are you trying to do with these milkshakes? It's pretty early. Like, is there any kind of job that you're trying to do with these milkshakes? Like, and why didn't other things like kind of work? And the people said, oh yeah, like I like a milkshake for breakfast because, you know, I can't eat a banana because, you know, like then I can't like open my hands, and what do I do with the peel? I can't eat a candy bar because it doesn't like fill me up as much. You know, I can't eat like, you know, a sandwich or anything because my hands get greasy. But the milkshake is like this perfect thing that keeps me full enough until lunchtime, where, you know, I don't get hungry again and my hands aren't dirty or anything like that. So, you know, that was like the insight that really powered a lot of the growth. So, you know, we try to do kind of like this, a very similar thing where I'll give you an example, like one of our other apparel businesses that we bought serves primarily like plus size women, right? And when I purchased it, I thought like plus size clothing is plus size clothing. I just went to different places and bought plus size clothing, marked them up, and thought, okay, plus size women get plus size clothing. That like come get it, like my revenue is going to go up, right? And it wasn't until like I called a lot of the customers, and I noticed that they were all, not all, but a majority of them were wearing these outfits to go to events, to like go to parties, to dress up. So that would explain why like the plus size clothing that was more plain or kind of like floral dresses didn't really work as well as kind of like the like shiny prints or like the, you know, very kind of like showstopper, like get compliments, like, oh, that's like a cool like suit that you're wearing, right? So knowing that like job to be done, we're able to merchandise a lot better because, you know, we're not buying plain t-shirts, we're not buying jeans, we're buying like, hey, dress up for your next party. Like we're, you know, doing like, oh, this is our version of a luxury designer, you know, but in plus size for you. So it's kind of like that was a big lesson learned from the jobs to be done kind of theory.
I love that story, man. Like understanding what job is somebody trying to do and help them fulfill that job with your product. And you can make it very subjective versus like, you know, yeah, I like it. I like it a lot. John, thanks so much for coming on. It's really, really been fun to chat.
Sure.
Really appreciate it.
Yeah, my pleasure, man.
Yeah. All right, everybody. Thank you so much for listening. I'll speak to you all soon. If you want to check out more about John, I'll link to his stuff. And yeah, thanks again.
Cool. Sounds good. Thanks, Jared.
Thank you.